The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We'll be talking to Terry Sheridan in just a moment. But first, Cian Burns, you've been looking at the numbers because they're still projecting, even though it is really all over by the shouting.
They are, exactly, Pat. It is really all over. But as we heard in the news from Eamon, Donald Trump is currently at 266 electoral votes. That's four off the 270 he needs to win. However, a 6:45 this morning, Fox News, which is a more right-leaning network, called it for Trump. However, Fox News has a very reliable track record on this. If they call it, it's generally what is going to pan out. Now, the main state that they used to call this was Wisconsin. They gave Trump Wisconsin, and that put him over to give him 277 electoral votes, but they are the only network who's calling it at that number at the moment.
Now, what about Michigan?
So Michigan's still to come, still to declare. However, the New York Times are saying it is very likely for Trump. This is a state which is quite interesting because Harris has struggled here with younger voters. So back in 2020, Biden won 61% of the young vote. But this time around, the exit poll, which came out late last night, said that Trump was winning the younger vote by 51% to 46% for Harris, which is a significant change from Biden 4 years ago.
Okay. The Sunbelt states of Arizona and Nevada, what's happening there?
Yeah, so these are two other good swing states, but it again looks like they're leaning for Trump. CBS News has Nevada rated as lean Trump, and the New York Times are saying both are going to go to Trump. Like, for example, in Nevada, Harris would need 66% of the votes that are still left outstanding. CBS News are saying she's only going to get 37. So really, it looks like Trump is going to hoover up all those states.
Now, the Republicans have the Senate. We know that. That's a given, and was even before the election. But the House, is that still up for grabs?
The House is still up for grabs. So they only had 220 seats, two over a majority the last time round. This time, we're currently at 195 seats for the Republicans. Speaker of the House, Johnson, has said that he believes they will get this, and that would mean that Republicans would have control of the presidency and both chambers of Congress.
Cian, thank you very much. Well, we're joined on the line by Terry Sheridan, Director of News at WSHU Public Radio. Terry, good morning.
Hey, good morning to you, Pat.
You must be exhausted after a long night.
It's been a long day and a long night, yes.
Okay, now your analysis of, I mean, we know where it's going. It's going to be a Trump presidency. It's going to the Senate with the Republicans. Perhaps still a toss-up with the House. What are you thinking?
I think the House is still, I think that's the Democrats' best chance. I think it's in the realm of possibility. We know that they've picked up at least one seat on Long Island that was lost 2 years ago. They kept one seat that they thought they were going to lose in Connecticut. So it's still too early to say. But one thing I'd like to add is that you have the Republican conservative majority on the Supreme Court, so that if the Republicans get the presidency, the Senate, the House, they also have the Supreme Court.
What is being said in New York, at any rate, about the reasons for a poorish Democratic performance?
I think there's a lot of head scratching going on. You know, the momentum seemed to have switched to Harris in the past couple of weeks. But as you look in all the different ethnic or sociological breakouts, she lost voters in almost every category, less voters than Joe Biden had, or less percentage of them, including the ones you wouldn't think, including Black Americans, including Hispanic Americans, including Muslim Americans. The women's vote has not appeared to be as big a factor as it was thought to be, nor was the young people, the student factor. People thought that was going to go overwhelmingly for Harris, but that did not.
And what do you think was the reason that Harris didn't hit the spot with so many categories? I mean, for many people, was it simply that they're not ready for a female in the Oval Office?
Well, that's one of the theories going back, not ready for a female, not ready for a woman of color to be president. I'm sure that in certain parts of the country and in certain people and certain minds, that certainly had an effect on it. I don't know whether it's she, you know, we talk about riding coattails. Maybe she had the negative effect that she was seen too closely to Joe Biden. The exit polls that were coming out were saying, you know, anywhere in the 30s that people thought that Joe Biden was doing a good job, you know, low 30s, 32%. That had to have some effect. And then I just think there was just some people still feel anxious and still feel afraid and uptight about what's happening in the country, especially with the economy.
And yet the economy is in good shape. Prices are still Absolutely. High and they're not going to come down. So the Democratic presidency of Biden has handed Trump a very sound economy. And he will, of course, claim it's all his own doing.
Right. They've handed him a sound economy. And, you know,
he virtually can, full employment.
Full employment, sound economy, best Wall Street. And he'll claim it as his own. And again, we'll see how long that lasts. But yeah, I mean, pretty much right now, Donald Trump, he has no guardrails, you know, especially if he gets all the Republicans in the House, Senate, and also the Supreme Court. And again, who is he going to have in his cabinet? Who is he going to have there to keep him check and balance?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned what he might do. He's talked much of retribution if he got elected this time round. So I want you to listen to a roundup of some of the things he's threatened to do. This is from Cecilia Vega, 60 Minutes correspondent on CBS.
I mean, I just was pulling some of the things he said in the last few months on perhaps even the least threatening end. And this is threatening revoking broadcast licenses for broadcast networks, including the threat to revoke this one. Going after what he calls the enemy within of his political rivals by name, Biden, Pelosi, the entire, quote, Biden crime family. He says he would fire special counsel Jack Smith within 2 seconds of taking office. And as we were saying earlier, he called for the televised military tribunal of Liz Cheney. We started this conversation, John, when you questioned whether the checks in place would keep him in check. I wonder if there's anyone left around him right now who would even impose some of those checks. The John Kellys and the Mark Milleys are gone. Those are the people who were the checks before.
So, Terry, broadcast licenses being revoked because he doesn't like the kind of interviews they were doing. Firing Jack Smith to save his own skin, I suppose. Liz Cheney before some sort of tribunal televised to humiliate her publicly. And the enemy within, whoever they may be.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, getting rid of Jack Smith, that's something he can do. And once he gets his Department of Justice, he has the authority to terminate Jack Smith, you know, from his role. So in that, he can do it. As he said, he can do that in 2 seconds. The other things will take a little bit of time. But one of the things in Project 2025 is the mass firing, the mass dismissal of the civil servants in the federal government, the career civil servants who serve no matter who is the president, what party is in power, and replacing them with people who he considers loyalists. So once, if he is able to do that, and if he gets his people in, then things like the FCC perhaps going after broadcast licenses could be a thing. It could be a thing to have his Department of Justice go after criminal charges for people he perceived as enemies. Some of the other things, you know, who knows? Some of it's just Trumpian rhetoric, but there are things that he can do once he has the levers of power and once he has his people inside the government, not just the White House, but in the government.
Now, it's one of the strange things, though, that the permanent civil service generally know how things work. If you remove them, things fall apart.
Correct. And, you know, they are loyal to the government. They are loyal to the Constitution. They're not loyal to a person nor to a party, even though, obviously, you know, you do have people with strong party feelings. But if you put loyalists in there who operate, you know, if you're running the train, you want someone who knows how to drive the train. You don't want someone to drive the train in a liberal way. You don't want someone to drive the train in a conservative way. You want someone who knows how to drive the train. That's what the career civil servants bring.
Terry, thank you very much for your insights. You can go back to bed now.
Thank you very much
for staying up for us. Terry Sheridan, who's Director of News at WSHU Public Radio. One of the texts coming in, because you can't go to college in the US unless you pay a fortune, get a sports scholarship or join the army, the country is largely poorly educated. Poorly educated people are easy to fool. Trump has promised them to be everything to everyone. According to him, he's pretty much getting rid of all taxes. Only fools could believe that it is possible to run an economy without taxation. He's also somehow managed to kid the Muslims in America that he will end the war in Gaza and Lebanon. He will make good on this promise, though, by fully backing Netanyahu to finish off the job. I'm just thankful I don't live in the States, Gaza, Lebanon or Ukraine. And when Putin gets his way, Poland or the Baltic states. That's from Noel. All right, we're joined now by Fawaz Gurgis, Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Fawaz, good morning.
Good morning to you.
What is your reaction to the confirmation of Trump as the 47th president of the United States and what it's going to mean?
You know, I have lived in the United States most of my life. My family is still there. I have studied the United States for more than three decades. I have published books on American foreign policy. I think what we have seen in the past 24 hours is a political earthquake. This is not just about the elections of Donald Trump. The United States, the center in the United States has moved more and more to the right, actually the far right. So you have now almost a landslide. It will be a landslide based on what we see for Donald Trump. The Senate has gone Republican. The House most probably will remain Republican, dominated. The Supreme Court, you're going to have the Justice Department basically restructured by Donald Trump. Donald Trump could do whatever he wants because the country has really moved, in fact, far to the right of Donald Trump. People don't realize this. The Democratic coalition assembled by Biden has been shattered to a million pieces. More blacks voted for Donald Trump than ever. More Hispanic Americans have voted for Donald Trump than ever. Muslim Americans, Arab Americans, young students. And your correspondent was talking about the economy is good. Apparently, the economy is not good in the United States if you are a middle class. I have family there. On the macro level, everything sounds good. On the micro level, millions of Americans are suffering. The divide between the upper and the middle and the lower is vast, is massive. The economy was the most important question for most Americans, and illegal immigration, and of course, crime and social crime and what have you. So the reality is, I think Biden and Harris brought us to this particular point, not only because of their, macroeconomic politics, their militarization of the world, their wars in Gaza and in Lebanon. So a variety of factors, but the U.S. has been really moving to the right more and more in the past 20 years. Now the earthquake is really the aftershocks. We have to wait and see what the aftershocks are in the next few weeks and months and years.
Now, we've already seen that congratulations from Benjamin Netanyahu and his wife to Trump and his wife, and talking about the everlasting friendship between Israel and the United States. I mean, what is going to happen with Netanyahu? I mean, the gloves have been off anyway. What difference is it going to make to have Trump?
First of all, Pat, for your own listeners, is extremely inappropriate and professional on the part of Netanyahu and his wife to congratulate Donald Trump now. He has not been confirmed as the president-elect so far. Harris has not conceded the elections, but it tells you a great deal about the mindset of Benjamin Netanyahu. Benjamin Netanyahu is an honorary card-carrying member of the Republican Party. This is the name, this is the given to him by the neoconservatives in the United States. He has outrun the clock on Biden. He has outsmarted Biden. And the reason why he did not accept any ceasefire in Gaza or in Lebanon, because he put all his eggs in Trump's basically basket. He and his coalition members, the extremist coalition, they were praying, they were gambling that Donald Trump will be elected, and he has been elected. On the policy question, I really don't know. No one knows how will Donald Trump basically act vis-a-vis the wars in Gaza and Lebanon. On the one hand, he has made it very clear that he wants basically to bring about peace. On the other hand, in the last telephone call between Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump, after Benjamin Netanyahu ordered the assassination of Hamas leaders and Hezbollah's leaders, Donald Trump congratulated him and said, look, you have to do what you have to do, finish the job. And what we need to understand historically, if history serves as a guide, it was Donald Trump that really broke with the consensus in American foreign policy on the Middle East and the Israel-Palestine conflict. He moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. He recognized Israel's colonization of the Syrian-occupied Golan Heights. He legitimized Israeli settlements of the West Bank. He sent his foreign secretary, Pompeo, to settlements on the West Bank. And basically, his team, the team around Donald Trump, is basically more Likud-oriented than Benjamin Netanyahu himself.
Fawaz, what are we to make of Netanyahu firing his defense minister yesterday? What was that all about?
Several American officials said he basically fired him on the night of the elections because he knew that there would be no major response on the part of the Biden administration. So the reality is now he not only fired his defense minister, some Israeli officials say that Netanyahu is planning to fire his top military and intelligence officials. He's trying to really remake, his coalition and the cabinet, because obviously he views what's happening in Gaza and Lebanon as a long war. He's really, planning for a long war. And now with Donald Trump in office, he's probably gambling that Donald Trump will give him a green light to go after the biggest prize. The biggest prize for Benjamin Netanyahu and his coalition are not Gaza and are not really Lebanon. It's the nuclear program, Iran's nuclear program, and regime change in Iran. And this is where the convergence of interest, basically, between the Likud-led government and the Trump, new administration. My only hope, and I hope I am right, I don't know if I am right, Pat, is that Donald Trump is not really a warmonger. He's not really, unlike the Democrats and even the traditional Republicans, he really is not for forever wars. He does not really believe. In fact, he does not really have a geopolitical vision.
No, he doesn't. But doesn't he have the idea of the big stick? I mean, he was threatening to nuke North Korea. And we had the situation where Jim Mattis was going in to pray every morning about how he would go about planning the destruction by nuclear weapons of millions of North Koreans.
Well, Pat, I have my answer to what you said, and you're absolutely correct, really, is multifaceted. First of all, we know that Donald Trump does not really believe in wars. He does not really believe in forever wars. He has made it multiple times that forever wars have cost Americans, $9 trillion since 2001. And he keeps saying it's all about the economy. He's a transactional president, not a geopolitical president, point one. Point two, Donald Trump, in an interview with the Wall Street Journal editorial board just a few weeks ago, he made it very clear. He wants to be seen by his enemies as, he used a four-letter word, and then crazy. A four-letter word, crazy, the unpredictability, he says. I want the world to know that I'm crazy. I could do anything. But my hope is that he basically will slow down the militarization of the world, whether you're talking about the Sea of China, whether you're talking about Europe, whether you're talking about the Middle East. In the sense, what he will say about the Ukraine, he will tell the Europeans, well, look, the Ukraine is your problem. If you want to support the Ukraine, you have to put your money where your mouth is. He does not really want, the whole thing about giving the Ukraine to Putin on a silver platter is just, rhetorical. But he wants Europe to pay for its own defense and for the defense of the Ukraine.
Do you believe that Joe Biden will give the green light to Ukraine in the short term and in the few weeks left to his presidency to use long-range missiles and hit Russia where it hurts?
You know, Pat, I'm sorry to say, the people who say it's a silly question. Will it make a difference on a battlefield? I mean, think of how many weapons and missiles and drones that Ukraine has fired on Russia. Russia has been gradually, systematically, basically taking territories in the east, in the Ukrainian east. So even if he does, it will not make any strategic difference on the battlefield. At the end of the day, you're going to have a peaceful settlement, a political settlement. Sadly and tragically, and we have warned about it in the past 3 years, it will be at the expense of the Ukraine. When great powers are engaged in this kind of proxy wars, basically, middle powers and small states pay the price. This is what's going to happen in the Ukraine at the end of the day, whether next year or the year after, unless Europe really stands up and defends its own interests. But you know more than I do that Europe has become more and more reliant and dependent on the United States. European unity is more of a mirage. There is unified policy. Look what's happening in Gaza. Where is Europe? With the exception of Ireland and Spain and Norway and a couple of states, Europe really is deeply divided. Even on the Ukraine, there are some major fractures in the European, coalition. So at the end of the day, no one knows what really the foreign policy of Donald Trump will be. This is a president. In fact, the New York Times published a piece about a few days ago. It says The foreign policy of Donald Trump is a non-foreign policy. He basically does foreign policy by decrees. He is incoherent. He is chaotic. And in the next 4 years, that's what we're going to see, at least on the international stage. At home, he knows what he wants to do. Tariffs, tariffs, tariffs. It's economic wars against China, economic wars against India. The man believes that tariffs, oh, he said he loves tariffs. And this will have major impact on the fracturing of globalization, supply chain, inflation, the world. I mean, we really have to realize the damage to the world economy in the next 4 years. It's going to be tremendous because of his tariff-oriented or dominated vision for the United States.
Fawaz Girgis, Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics and Political Science. Thank you very much for joining us. Now-
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.